In today's episode,
a CMO of a public company said to me, "We don't believe in the internet. We call it the internet." And that's always stayed with me. And this guy had a budget of, you know, billions and billions in marketing spend. And my job was
2010.
No, that was later. That was when I moved to New York, actually. That was in 2013, 14. And yeah, insane. And this guy, you know, he was 70 something years old. To be fair, their stock actually did pretty well. They were a huge TV spender.
You can't say what it is. Can you tell us and bleep it out?
Welcome to a special episode of Creator Lab. As always, this is your host, Bilal Zaidi. Wanting to give you an update on what's been going on in my world and share some of the plans for how I'll be releasing episodes for Creator Lab over the coming months. In short, I have more conversations with the world's best entrepreneurs coming your way soon, including an upcoming chat with Eric Jorgensen, who wrote The Almanac of Naval Ravikant. But you may be wondering where I've been for a while, so I wanted to share some updates. Unfortunately, I got a breakthrough case of COVID and needed to take a few weeks to get back to full fitness. Thankfully, I'm feeling much better right now, and even though I'm fully vaccinated, it really knocked me out for a week. So please take care of yourself. This thing is no joke. On the positive side, I've been busy growing my digital marketing consultancy that many of you know I work on full time. And you may have also seen that I launched a new podcast called Not Investment Advice with my friends Jack Butcher and Trung Phan. Every week, we're breaking down what we're finding on the edges of the internet, from the world of Web3 and crypto to crazy ideas from startup land and the wider business world. We're dissecting the emerging trends of our time, and so many of you who listen to Creator Lab have told me how much you're enjoying the shows. So I wanted to share a special segment today where the guys are grilling me about what makes Google and YouTube such an incredible business. If you want to check out the full episode where we discuss how Nas, the Grammy winning musician, has become a phenomenal investor in companies like Robinhood and Coinbase, and how Jack sold his time with a non-fungible performance art auction, click the link in the show notes below or search for Not Investment Advice on your podcast app or YouTube. Let me know what you think of this by tagging or DMing me on Twitter. I'm at BZady as always. And check out some of the other episodes. I've been having such an amazing time recording these, and we're discussing topics like the greatest ad campaigns of all time, the difference between Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk's approach to going to space, had Jack Dorsey's playing 4D chess with Square, Twitter, and Bitcoin, tech's impact on culture and Jay-Z's NFTs, the genius of Virgil Abloh, Call a Daddy $60 million Spotify deal, investing in the next decentralized Disney, and Jack's popular Edge of the Internet segment, where he gives us behind the scenes access to all the crazy digital art he's been investing in and the projects he's finding popping up across the internet. You know how much I love doing these interviews, so I'll keep recording those and releasing them here on Creator Lab, but bear with me as I'm juggling a lot of things at once right now. In the meantime, I hope you enjoy some of those episodes that I'm recording on Not Investment Advice, and today's segment on this show, we'll get straight into that after a brief message from our sponsors. This week's episode is sponsored by AppSumo, the marketplace entrepreneurs trust to buy and sell products that grow small businesses into name brands. There's no better place for tools to help you build and grow your business. Whether you're a content creator, designer, or marketer, they're connected to some of the hottest tech companies, so you don't have to waste time searching for great stuff. AppSumo makes it easy for you to automate and boost your productivity so you can actually focus on your business. Sign up at AppSumo.com or hit the link in the description below. And this week's episode is sponsored by Space, the easiest way to engage your team over audio. Space helps remote teams have engaging discussions over audio, so you can create rooms that are always open as well as scheduled for live discussions, so your team can communicate without meeting links and friction. To learn more, book a time with an onboarding expert at joinspace.com. Now let's get straight into the show.
We just had the most recent earnings from big tech and the biggest digital advertisers, and the numbers are absolutely insane, right? So Google ad revenue, basically ad base, up 69% year on year. Yeah, there it is. Insane. YouTube up 84% year on year. And look at the numbers that these are coming off of. These are at low bases, right? Like Google's already doing $120, $130, $140 billion a year in revenue, and it's going up 70% year on year. Snapchat, 116%. Twitter, 87%. LinkedIn, for God's sake. LinkedIn is up 100% year on year digital advertising.
It's crazy.
So, but having said that, to put a pin on the hat, absolutely massive growth numbers in digital advertising, even from huge bases already. And yeah, I think it's just going to keep running, right? So love to, the opportunity here is to pick Bilal's brain, former Google employee. So, I mean, Bilal, what you can pick, man, like Tell us about the magic of these platforms, why, and you work in the digital ad space and what you're seeing, and the, if the shift in your eyes is inevitable.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, so when I started working on it, it was January 2010, right? So just to paint a picture of what it was like then, it wasn't the beginning of Google, obviously, but even then I would be going into rooms and people, like there's a CMO of a public company said to me, we don't believe in the internet, we call it the internet. And that's always stayed with me. And this guy had a budget of, you know, billions and billions in marketing spend. And my job was
2010.
No, that was later. That was when I moved to New York, actually. That was in 2013, 14. And yeah, insane. And this guy, you know, he was 70 something years old. To be fair, their stock actually did pretty well. They were a huge TV spender.
You can't say what it is. Can you tell us and bleep it out?
It's a shoe company that isn't like Nike, Adidas, though I'd work with some of them as well.
Okay, you've said enough. We can tease
yeah,
it
yeah,
out.
Yeah. They're old school. And I mean, honestly, it's not, I mean, I would say the name is just like, I don't know, like any implications.
It's cool, but I don't want to get
some funny stories with this guy. I mean, he had some legendary emails and stuff that he would say, but I mean, stuff that probably should be cancelable nowadays for the sort of stuff he'd say. But I mean, one thing I'll quickly say, we took him to the US Open. And it was, you know, one of them client events. I know Jack's done a bunch of this in his old job as well. And he literally told us, these are the worst seats I've ever been in. and I'm sure we were just sitting there like, why? This is so ridiculous.
Where were you sitting?
It was just like a normal seat. It wasn't in like a box or anything. But we were like, all right, well, if you spend a little bit more money on YouTube, maybe we'll upgrade you next time. But yeah, so obviously I'm kind of joking. But he said stuff like that. And it was just, but so that's in 2015 or 2014. 2010, the way people saw Google, even I'd argue even today, is people just think of Google search, right? But Google is just obviously the full stack of advertising on the advertising side. There's awareness, there's the YouTube side, which is basically like the equivalent of TV advertising. There's what used to be print advertising that people spend a bunch of money on is Google Content Network, Display Network, and, you know, millions of websites on the internet, AdSense. And then right at the bottom is Google search, right? Like when I say the bottom, I mean the funnel. So like what people have spent traditionally their money on is brand advertising. Like the majority of budgets were spent on eyeballs, Coca-Cola, get it in your face, car ads like Jack used to work on. And that makes sense because you're trying to go broad. But what the amazing thing with Google search, and arguably why it's the best, you know, advertising product of all time, it was the first time you got true intent and someone just putting their hand up at the moment of purchase or at the moment of wanting information, right? Because you spend hundreds of hours doing other stuff, but when you're looking for a flight, you type in cheap flights to Barcelona, or you'll say best Airbnbs in Spain or whatever. And that's the moment where a booking.com is going to say, I want to make sure I bid on every single query. And not giving much away here, but they were basically the biggest client at the time.
Well, the OTAs are responsible
exactly.
for the majority.
That
of the
one
largest, right?
Company, I think, spent over $1 billion just
online
on Google
search. Online travel agencies, OTAs, are the largest spenders on Google.
Yeah. And they're just bidding on every single thing, right? So that's one is the intent. The second big thing is auction, right? So a lot of people listening might already know this, but for those of you who don't, let's go back to what advertising was all about before. Magazines, TV, print. You would say, I've got X eyeballs. This is the rate to reach 1,000, a million people. Now pay me this money, right? There was no real measurement, like how many people clicked and went to the site and how many purchased, what's the lifetime value, all the crazy stuff we can do now. With search, they said, well, we're not just going to fix the price. We're going to open it up to the market. There's going to be an auction. And without going into all the weeds, it's a dynamic auction where I can say, as a Shopify small site who's selling shoes, I know my margins, I know my average order value, I'm willing to spend $3 per click. And someone else comes along like Amazon and says, well, actually we can bid $3.50 because, you know, we're Amazon and we want to be in the top. But the key thing is that's just the one part of the auction. The second part of the auction is what's called ad rank, or basically quality score, right, is a better way to describe it. So that means if I'm in the top position, I could actually be paying a lot less than someone in number two or number five position. And the reason is because if my ad is the most relevant, if I'm Nike and someone types in Nike, my ad should show up first. So I'm rewarded So Nike's cost per click could be 50 cents for their own click, and Adidas could be in second place paying $5. So it's not just the biggest, the one who's got the biggest bid wins, it's those two components.
So this revolutionized, really rewarding
relevancy.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, there is also a lot of negatives, right? Listen, let me frame it with the negatives. I want you to keep talking about.
Definitely, no.
The thing that, because it does come to mind where you say the relevancy. So a big criticism now is basically, though, that like your competitors can buy your keywords, right? So that's supposed to stop that. But if you actually type in Shopify, you might get a competitor at the top. So Toby Lutke, the CEO of Shopify, has complained.
He's been calling him out, right?
Yeah, I've seen that. He's like, I have to pay to stay on top of Google search, right? Which is, it does, he basically said it was a hush money or like a mob, like a mob payment, essentially,
yeah,
right?
I completely get that point of view. I if I was paying out of my own pocket to bid on my own brand, I would feel like that. But the other argument is it's a free open market and there are some policies, right? If you look at traditional advertising, Microsoft and Apple forever were calling each other out, right? Like they were talking about each other's stuff. We've always done that. So you could argue this is something similar and they've tried to account for, you know, the relevancy to get the user the best result. But anyway, I'm not like a spokesperson for Google. This is my opinion. And I do think it's in Google's advantage to have all of those running, obviously, because of money. I've worked with a lot of brands who didn't want to bid on their own brand. And they just lost money because why are you even going to risk having your competitor at that moment in that person's mind? Like, don't even risk it. So
it's just how it is, right? Like, that's the game, right? Like before, if you're going to a supermarket, you have to bid for that shelf space, right? You want to be eye level, you got to pay for it. So I get that. So just to summarize, the number one is the moment of intent, which is just unbelievable, right? It's the most powerful and best time to capture somebody. The auction mechanisms. What else is there? What is the secret sauce that people might not know?
Yeah, I mean, and then I guess for me, beyond search, because obviously as a business, search is incredible because they're not sharing revenue with anyone pretty much. There are something called search partners like Ask Jeeves, if you remember them, and Ask. So they run basically Google search ads on their search engines and they take a cut, right? So that apart from that, they're basically got 100% margins on that transaction. Obviously, there's other like costs to account for, but you can't compare that with anything, right? Even YouTube and which we can come on to in a second, which is an amazing business, you have revenue shares, right? So YouTube pays out 55% to the publisher, keeps 45% for themselves as the platform. Google has 100% of the share on Google search. And then a big thing, what's happening right now is with Apple, who are kind of playing around now with iOS updates, where they're trying to bring more privacy controls and stuff like that. But they're basically blocking a lot of these pixels and stuff like that, which is a huge problem for advertising right now. Right. So if you're running Facebook ads, your numbers have gone down pretty much a lot of the time. And so Facebook's getting impacted by that. Everyone's getting impacted, but I would argue that Google search isn't as impacted because it's first party data. Whereas, you know, with Facebook, you're relying on people's browsing behavior and stuff like that across websites. So anyway, we can go down a rabbit hole there. But the last thing I'll say is YouTube. And this is something that people have been talking a lot about because the numbers just came out. I think the quarterly revenue was $7 billion or something like that, which is kind of crazy to put that
it's
in perspective.
Pace. It's going to surpass Netflix.
It's going to surpass Netflix, right?
Yeah.
And that is insane because if you look at just from a business point of view, Netflix spends billions and billions of dollars on production and creating all this amazing content. And it's got a different business model. They're charging people every month. And then YouTube is like, you know, obviously investing. They're actually paying out $20-30 billion to creators and publishers too. But they're not like commissioning House of Cards, right? Like it's a very different business model. And now they're adding in subscription too. So they're getting advertising money and subscription.
Yeah.
And they've got 1-2 billion users or whatever. I don't know the exact numbers.
It's 2 billion plus.
So if you just think of that, that's on the user side. And the last part I'll say is the ads, the last innovation, bringing the intent that we talked about on search and the auction dynamic to video advertising. That didn't really exist in the same way. So they invented this thing called TrueView ads. So you know those annoying ads everyone skips on YouTube? A lot of people don't know, but if you press skip and you watch less than 30 seconds, the advertiser doesn't pay any money. And that was Google's way of YouTube's way of saying, well, if how do we bring that same intent to this sort of advertising, which traditionally only paid for impressions? And yeah, you can still buy impressions as well, like, you know, number of eyeballs. But a lot of people use the auction. And, you know, that costs, man. Like, I run these ads. They cost like 2 to 3, 5 cents sometimes. And you're only paying when someone wants to watch it. So that was a pretty big innovation as well.
Well, dude, I want to talk about that, actually, because the intent piece is so big, right? Is if YouTube can actually deliver. So let me ask you, you're the expert here. How close is that to being similar to the text search? How far are we from that?
I think it's still far because the text search is literally the moment you're proactively searching, you're putting your hand up and saying, give me this information. Whereas YouTube is still, you're generally being pushed that message.
It might be like, hey, what is a recipe for exactly. chicken salad, right? And it's like, exactly. you might be able to and send up.
That's a different type of search, right? Because like, there's navigational search. There's like, how do I get to a place? There's a commercial driven search, which is like, what's the price of this? What's the best credit card? Stuff like that. But that's just search. Obviously, most of YouTube is actually just people browsing. And the way you target people is not just on search. It's like just based on the audience browsing behavior. So, and actually, if you're listening to this and you're curious, if you go on your browser and go to google.com/ads, ADS /preferences, it's not 100% accurate, but you can see what Google is seeing as your profile in terms of the advertising groups.
Fascinating.
So I'm looking at mine right now and it's got my age. It's got types of music I like.
Nas, does it say Nas? Because if it doesn't, it's wrong.
It's got hip hop. And this is really broad, right? So all of this isn't completely accurate. But as an advertiser, then you can go and say, I want to go find millions of people who are hip hop fans, who are in this demographic. So it's pretty incredible, man. And the last thing I'll mention and is now there's ways that you can take the Google search intent actually on Google search, like typing in best, you know, hotels in Barcelona, create a group and then target those people on YouTube with ads, which you couldn't do when I used to work there.
Oh, that was connecting.
There's a way to do it. It's quite advanced. Most people don't do this still. And that way you're actually taking the intent of that person who's already shown the intent. And then you're getting the scale of video and you're telling a better story than a text ad. You're getting a video with sound, sight, motion, or whatever. So man, it's look, I'm not like, I do work in this stuff and I find it interesting. It can be a little boring for some people, but if you just compare that to dumb TV ads TV has its place and they're not, you know, you can make money from running TV ads for sure, but there's none of this, right? Like you can't segment and target in this way and actually see all the analytics and see how it's working. So I just think more money on a macro level is going to keep moving in this direction. And YouTube's probably in the best place because if the money is still in the brand dollars and the kind of like conversion dollars, which is like people spending to buy, or like commercial at the bottom of the funnel, they've got all of it. So yeah, man, we could talk about it for ages, but go on.
I want to add, well, first of all, man, that's amazing. We need to keep grilling you about this because getting the weeds, but I think people will like it. Yeah. I have three comments about YouTube and then I want to ask Jack about it because he's worked in television and I don't know, he's done ads in the past too. So YouTube, what's interesting is just from, if you're looking at it from an investor point of view, its average revenue per user is only a third of Facebook, right? So like huge room to run. Like if say even doubles, right? It's a $60 billion a year business. And if you, and a 10X multiple, and that's not insane. So literally YouTube is probably $500 billion asset, right? Which is insane. That'd be like the 15th to 20th biggest company in the world. So that's one thing.
That would be twice the size of Netflix, right? Because Netflix is like exactly. 2 to 30.
It's bigger than Disney. The other thing that I want to mention was, and you touched on it, but so YouTube really is positioning themselves to take over the cable bundle, right? Like people keep talking about, oh, like who, you know, is NBC going to go over the top? Is CBS going to go over the top? But it's actually, wait a second. YouTube already has a TV package. YouTube TV costs $70 a month. They're already building these relationships out. And the amount of money that's in cable television is astronomical, right? We're talking tens and tens and tens. I think it might even be close to $100 billion a year.
Yeah.
Is that kind of industry. If that's shifting online, people are kind of missing. They think that people are going to put that money into like streaming services. Hey, you know, $10 on Netflix a month, $10 on Disney a month. It's like, well, actually, YouTube is building the full replacement. And if they capture that, and like you said, this is adding on top of the fact that they already have this existing ad business, which is 90% of their revenue.
And that's the thing, now people can just press a button and go in the same interface. You buy YouTube ads in the same interface you buy Google search ads.
There you go,
so
dude.
So it's all in one place, right? It's
the levers incredible. They have to pull to make YouTube bigger are absolutely, it's crazy. This literally, I mean, and it's already the second most visited website in the world, is the second biggest search engine in the world already behind Google. But yeah, I'm blown away by it. I'd love to tease out more. I'm going to do a little bit more research.
Yeah, we can do that. I'm curious on Jack's point of view though, because Jack, you worked, you know, in advertising forever. You did like real creative stuff, like the other side that I haven't had as much experience in. Like, what was your, did you see this changing over time as well? Because you're quite digitally savvy, but you're probably working with a lot of traditional people. Like, how was their kind of mindset towards the stuff you can do in digital versus like what it used to be like?
Yeah, I was just thinking about it as you guys were talking. One of the biggest barriers, I think, is similar to what we were talking about with smart contracts, like that's 10 years ahead of what we're talking about here. But the talent that exists to place digital media is way smaller of a pool. And the interfaces that you have to do to like run an ad on Facebook, Bilal, we were talking about this. It's like trying to like land the Starship Enterprise. Like you open that thing, it's like,
what the hell's going
am
on?
I looking yeah. at here, right?
You can I think Google's even worse, to be honest. It's right. even...
Exactly. You can boost a post or you can do like these really basic things, but the really sophisticated ad strategies, like you need like incredibly talented people to deploy that. One, probably because like engineers are building those interfaces and it's like they're making so much money without it being this like really sophisticated consumer product that maybe like they Definitely. Must be working on the UI of it and trying to make it easier to place ads and stuff. But that maybe like when none of this stuff happens overnight, but I feel like that has been a bit of a barrier to date. Whereas like we want to run a Super Bowl ad. It's like, you got a contact at wherever. It's like, give me the thing in this format and we'll run it. Right. Or we want a place.
It's also, they give the full service, right? Like it's very different where like half of our job was to train people how to do it themselves. Cause we couldn't do it all for them. But
I think it's completely obvious to most people at this point that like dollars spent online are like, you probably get more bang for your buck, but you also see like there are anomalies where like I sort of equate it to the D2C brands that end up in Target or whatever, right? So it's like you're selling, I think it was Harry's razors or something, and you think like, oh, these guys would never go in retail because it would kill their margins and stuff, but it's like ad placement and there are so many people that like we're so close to it that we don't quite understand that there still is like an enormous amount of reach that you can get from being in like more traditional media channels,
especially for CPG and like, yeah, because 70-80% of purchases still happen in store. Maybe for that category even higher, because it's, oh, I need a razor right now, let me
I'm doing my groceries before.
Exactly.
Yeah. I was definitely like dogmatic, like we shouldn't be doing anything outside of digital. And like, I didn't really have any data to back that up back then. But I think honestly, having like built a digital business and still not like being reasonably digitally savvy and still being like incredibly intimidated by a lot of those interfaces and things like that. Obviously big businesses have the resources to learn it and staff it up. Another interesting thing that I noticed is like the best talent in that world is not going to accept a salary. So like if you know how to turn $1 into two, why are you going to like go and work a $80,000 job at a corporation? And blah, we've talked a lot about this. So there are obviously exceptions to the rule, but it's almost like traders at this point. Like, they really get the market to the point where like the best talent is working in the most liquid part of the market.
Oh, they're like stock traders, right? Like, you're saying like the top ad digital ad people, they should be compensated like a Morgan Stanley, a top Morgan Stanley commodities trader.
100%. Like, and they will be eventually. Yeah. I think if not already, in some cases, like, you know, agencies work on performance, and if you get enough of the right clients and you have like, you know, a stake in the business, or performance-based pay, or you share upside in some other way, you see that happen at the low end of the market. But I think maybe that's a behavior that will start to sort of trickle up into these bigger businesses. I find it all pretty fascinating. But I also hate, like, we all don't think ads work on us, right? I've worked in advertising for a long time. Yeah, like,
that's the funny thing, right? Everyone says, I hate ads.
Yeah.
But we're still seeing them. The fact we even talked about Harry's is because we saw ads, or we heard ads on a podcast. And that's why I think a lot of people, like on Google search specifically, there was just people who didn't really know what they're talking about. And they would say, well, who clicks those ads anyway? And I'd be like, well, $100 billion worth of clicks. Right. So if that's who's clicking on them. And the one thing I'll say, just to add to what you said about the talent and stuff, I'm not trying to speak about myself like I'm one of those people, but I have for the last few years been self-employed, and I do that sort of work. Right?
Whoa, not investment advice. Come on, guys.
No, all I was going to say is that is basically how I make most of my living.
Yeah.
And I had to do a combination of, I'll charge a retainer for someone, which traditionally, like the first big kind of contract I got, they were looking for a full-time employee, and I just pitched them. I actually responded to, you know, when you get an automated emails where they say like, oh, you signed up for the product, email us if you want to speak. And I always respond to them to see who responds back to me. And that connection turned into, to be transparent, like hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of a contract, right, over a long time. And that company wanted to hire a full-time person. And I said, look, I'm not looking for a job, but I can do this work for you. I can do the same output, but you're getting someone with more experience. I'm going to charge you a similar price, but then I can go and have multiple clients. And then to add on to that, I created deals directly with people where they couldn't afford that amount, but I would say, oh, I'll do a revenue share with you. And now I get a percentage of revenue for every month.
Bro,
someone signs up.
Talk about Bilal's business, man.
No, it's not that complicated. Those are basically the two main ways. And then I make a tiny bit of money from advertising on my other podcast. So that's pretty much it. But it's just, I don't know, man. I think a lot of people don't even know that's an option. And there's more risk, right? Like tomorrow, those people could say, hey, we can't afford to pay you anymore. And I expect that to happen at some point where things just churn. But that's okay. That's the part of the risk of me being self-employed. So I kind of accept that.
Well, that's
but anyway,
what they always say, right? They say in a recession, marketing goes first. I don't know if that's true, though. Is it?
Well, I think at a high level, yes. But a lot of money, and that's actually a critique of the numbers, the year-over-year numbers, because this time last year, people stopped advertising or they cut their ads. So that's one contributing factor. But normally, like when I started, the Google stuff, it was 2010, in the recession still, basically, right? Like after 2008 and 2009, people were still cutting their budgets, but Google and Facebook gained in that time because we had the only sort of advertising that could be measured. So we could say, you're going to give us a dollar, we will turn it into three. And the hard thing is now it's becoming harder to do that because it's an auction and a marketplace, $1 now costs $2 or whatever. So
inflation, isn't it, Bilal?
Inflation, yeah. It's the Fed's fault, mate. It's the Fed's fault.
Well, it's also, I think you're right. They're going to cut advertising, but the Facebook and Google are going to be last, right? That billboard's going first.
Yeah.
Probably. Yeah. But now it's getting to the point where billboards, radio, and TV might be really efficient.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and it's just I'm kind of agnostic. If I was a CMO of a company, I would say, just show me the numbers and show me the reach and the pros and cons. And like, it might make sense to run radio ads right now. So anyway, we talked about a bunch. Go on, Jack.
I was just saying one more thing of like, all these markets have like arbitrage inherently baked into them, right? So I've got a couple of friends that started e-com brands in 2012 or whatever. And it's literally, you could throw a dart at a wall on Facebook in 2012 and make money because like, you're the first in here and like there isn't this crazy market where people are bidding against you. And the other condition that creates is people just like reverse engineer what works from everybody else, which is harder to do in TV or on billboards or whatever else, because it's not this mark where everybody sees what you're doing. So that to me is like, it just squeezes it and it becomes so efficient and so competitive that like you really do, you know, we end up in the same place of like the person who's top 1% gets 95% of the traffic and everyone else just gets destroyed. So it's just like, it's a really complex subject, but because when you were talking about attribution, Bilal, I was like, yeah, you can put an equation in front of someone, but it only works for 2 weeks. And then like that technique dries up or somebody else beats you to the keyword. They launch an article that's ahead of yours. It's back to the drawing board. So I think the other thing that's nice about sticking to TV and stuff like that is like, we'll just create a fun story, like a great TV ad, and people are going to love it. And we don't have to like just basically show up on the battlefield every day and just get beaten down by someone else's like better war strategy, essentially.
You're not overcomplicating it with TV, which is what happens a lot. Sometimes you have too many numbers to look at. And most of the biggest problem with the reason I even have any sort of business in that world is because you show a screen full of numbers in Google Analytics to 10 different people and they're going to come up with different conclusions.
Yeah.
And my job is really to say what's the most important thing, knowing all how everything links together. So I think that's another thing. Like with advertisers we worked with in the past, they would say, well, don't we just want to spend on that campaign because it just makes all the money? And like you said, that's too simplistic because you're not really capturing how users actually behave. Like you don't just buy a visualized value course from seeing it for the first time and then clicking and spending a few hundred dollars. Right. You've seen Jack tweet hundreds of times. You might have had a tweet back from him. You might have watched a video on NIA. And then eventually that person might buy something, but you, as the person who owns that business, you don't even have insight into all those touch points. So it's, super complicated, but the macro thing is this money is moving into this area for sure, man. They're in a good place.
Yeah, maybe to wrap it up is we talk about it all the time, is trusted distribution. And that's why brands are building their own media channels and like going direct to the audience, building a relationship with them directly, is because all of these other things are just going to get squeezed so hard that at the very best, you have to employ just killer talent to stay on top of it. And that's also true if you're building your own thing, but the relationship is deeper than just like trying to win somebody over in that moment that you talked about, Bilal.
Yeah.
No, you're going to say something? The last feather until we get edge of internet stuff, because I know people will be annoyed if they don't have edge of internet from Jack. But Bilal, just hit us straight, man. I know you're unloading some Google along the way and you're telling us you don't have as much Google as you do back in the day. Tell us how upset you are that you didn't hold on to your winners. And tell us what you've done.
This is referencing the Telegram. In our Telegram group chat, which you can join by clicking the link in the show notes below, Trung and I, and Jack as well, were talking about me selling Google stock along the way of me being there. I tried looking, because you were asking me like, what's the average sell price? And there's no way to easily see. It's like a stupid interface. But I was looking at when I sold, and that was a little depressing. But, you know, I think what I was doing, you know, so I sold in 2011, 12, 14, and that was pre-stock split. So I haven't even figured out how much of unrealized.
Is it now? It's 2,700 today?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. So they were I think I definitely sold some, like 400 and maybe like below 1,000, or probably at some point the equivalent of today's money, because it was a stock split. I really can't remember. But what I did do, to be fair, the reason I was selling was I believed in the company long term, so I still have held stuff until today. But I just had a huge chunk in one stock, right? And I was seeing what's going on with Facebook, what's happening with Amazon. So I bought Amazon. At one point, I had more Facebook stock than I did Google stock. In fact, even now, I think I have more Facebook than Google stock.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, because I haven't actually got much Google stock, to be honest. Yeah. And I'd buy like the QQQ, you know, like the NASDAQ or S&P 500, because I thought I can't put all my eggs in one basket. Like, I'm being paid by this company and I have stock. So if I lose my job or something bad happens, I need to spread the risk. But yeah, it's kind of depressing because I didn't really know what I was doing. I was just, you know, I was just like selling along the way.
Google has the greatest business model ever. They're going to be fine, bro.
I know. But Amazon's done pretty well.
You're the internet guy.
That's true. I was betting against it, man. But no, I will say, if I had to pick one, which was Jack's question in our Telegram, I'm not really buying Google stock right now, but like, the more I'm reading this, the way we're talking about it, like, YouTube alone is
perfect,
worth it,
man.
Right? And then I look at Amazon and I say, yeah, but look at their cloud. Like, their cloud is already crazy. So I'm just like, oh, just buy all of them. Like, you know, they're all investment advice. I hope you enjoyed that. If you want to hear the full episode, like I said, click the link in the description below. Or just pull out your podcast app that you're listening to this on right now, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever, and just type in Not Investment Advice and hit the subscribe button, and you can hear the full episode right there. And if you scroll into the episode notes, you'll also see timestamps on YouTube and on the podcast episode. So you can skip ahead or skip backwards, whatever you want to do. It's all there for you. And let me know what you think of this. This has been, you know, 15, 16, 17 episodes in now, and people seem to be liking it and we're having a blast. So I'd love your feedback. Just send me a note on Twitter at BZady. I'd love to hear from you. And until next time on Creator Lab, I'll see you on the next one.